You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 11th of August, 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and of course I have with me Mr. Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm okay, to be honest. I was a bit saddened last week to hear the news about Ernst Sundl. I'm sure we'll discuss his heroic feats in this particular program, along with other things, but yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic what happened earlier this week. He passed away from a heart attack after being separated from his wife for 2 years, being stuck in Germany, couldn't get back over to America, refused a visa to get over there to see his elderly wife, who was also ill, who needed his help. And before that, he was in prison. He spent 5 years in a German prison. And before that, he was kidnapped from America and extra rendition to Canada, in a jail in Canada for 2 years, and then taken over to Germany to stand trial in Germany for something that he said in Canada. I mean, just the mind boggles at the extent they will go to shut down all dissident thought and people that question what went on in World War II. I mean, the man was so persecuted. It's really tragic to hear that he's passed away. But all you can say is that because of his work, if it wasn't for his work, I don't think I would be doing this, and I don't think you would be doing this either. I mean, he brought World War II truth to millions of people. He has helped millions of people. I mean, the man is a modern-day saint. He's a martyr for the cause. Maybe we should talk a little bit about his life. I mean, we could go right back to his publishing company that he started up and how he was exposing the gas chamber myth, how they took him to court, the two court cases that he went through. And for the first time ever, the gas chamber witnesses were put on the stand, and we actually had proper lawyers that were able to question them, and their stories didn't stand up. And even though Ernst Sundl was found guilty of promoting fake news, the Holler Hoax witnesses, their credibility was completely destroyed. And then they threw the actual decision out of court. I believe he got 18 months and then he appealed against it, and they said that the charges were unconstitutional. So really, he should have had his name completely cleared. But then when he was in America visiting his wife, or he was a little bit late with his visa, and they just kidnapped him. And they kidnapped him, took him to Canada, put him in jail, and then flew him to Germany to put him in jail in Germany. Absolutely horrific way to treat someone. And the way they're talking about him now, they're saying that he was a race hater. He stirred up hatred against the Jews, violent race hatred. And yet the man didn't have a violent bone in his body. And he was a complete pacifist. He talked about that all the time, that he was a pacifist and had no urges for any violence towards anyone. The way they are slandering him and smearing him is criminal, Dennis. They're even calling him a Jew on Wikipedia. Wikipedia are saying that, yeah, that he was probably a Jew. I mean, that's how low they have sunk.
Well, they go that low, don't they? They go that way. They've gone that low with Hitler, and they've gone that low with me at times. But no, this guy, when I first came onto the internet and I learned so much from him, he was a real hero, persecuted. It's true that it was taken to court, but it was his house which was firebombed, and you know his offices. You know, they're calling him the terrorist when, as usual, you know, the other side get away scot free. And he actually did nothing, as you said. He was a pacifist. The only thing he did was hand out this leaflet, "Did 6 million die?" which was questioning the Holocaust, and this new religion of the Holocaust. Obviously, he's being protected by law, the only historical event to be protected by law. Eventually, he went through his trials and tribulations, and then he was looking to retire, actually, when he moved to America. His wife had moved to America. She was an American citizen, and he obviously qualified because she was, and I believe, you know, from what I heard, there was they claimed there's something wrong with his passport, whether that was bogus or not. And they did take him back to Canada for 2 years, in the most cruel way, imprisoned him in solitary confinement. I mean, that's one of the real cruel mental things to do to anybody. But he stood that for 2 years, and then eventually they knew if they could get him transported over to Germany, then there'd be no problem him serving time. And he actually turned around and said he was treated better in Germany in the 5 years he was in jail in Germany than he was in the 2 years in Canada, which I suppose in one way is a credit to the German guards. But all the time, an incident which stuck in my mind, well, a couple actually, but this particular one was when he came out, he did a radio interview, and this is how the propaganda worked, because he hadn't seen much alternative television. He'd just seen what he saw in the prison, and he came out and he's quite glowing about, would you believe, Obama. He hadn't realised that Obama was not what they said he was at first, but obviously Obama was just another one of the the American presidents. But he seemed to be quite fooled by it, and the radio guy who was interviewing did put him straight, and he realised, well, this is what I've seen, and this is what only a lot of people only see, and they only get that side of it. So even Ernst Zundel was fooled there. But this other little story I'd just like to throw in as well, like, he couldn't get into America. I always felt that he'd never get back into America again, because once you're classed as a terrorist, then it's the easiest thing to do to put the block on it. And Ernst couldn't get back to see his wife. But what they did do, they arranged a holiday, I believe, in Mexico. And they both met up for the first time since he came out of prison. Spent 2 weeks together, something like that, I believe. And watched, would you believe, Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told. And according to his wife, his opinion of it was, this guy should never been able to get hold of this footage. And, you know, that was a tribute coming from a great man.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm really pleased that he was able to see it. I mean, this was another part of the great tragedy, was that all the while that he was in prison in Germany, his wife couldn't come over to see him. She spent five years in prison. She couldn't come over there. She would have been sent to prison herself.
Yeah.
They would have locked her up if she came over. And none of this was for any crimes that they had committed on German soil, not for any crimes that they had committed on Canadian soil either, because they hadn't broken any Canadian laws. I mean, he was this unconstitutional fake news charge that they threw at him, they ended up having to rescind that. They ended up having to take that back. And yet, you know, it just goes against all international law to do something like that. It was an extrajudicial rendition. It's like these renditions that the left got all annoyed about with Guantanamo Bay, when they were taking people from Iraq and then taking them off to another country that didn't have the same laws as America, so that they could then interrogate them and lock them up and weren't bound by American law. It's the same as that, isn't it? They've taken him from America, where he hasn't broken any laws, to a country where if he had have done what he did in Canada, in Germany, he would have been breaking the law, but he wasn't. He was in Canada. You know, he put this stuff online when he was in Canada, completely legal for anyone in Canada to read or to put that stuff online. And yet the Germans wanted him and wanted to put him in prison. And for some reason, they were allowed to do that. And nobody spoke up about it. There was no Amnesty International making a fuss about it like there should have been. None of the liberal left heard anything about it. It wasn't in any of the newspapers. I believe it did get in the newspapers once they locked Sylvia Stoltz up, because they also locked his lawyer up for standing up for him, for defending him. Because if you defend a so-called Holocaust denier, then you also are a Holocaust denier. You also are criminally insane and must be locked up. I mean, surely, if you don't know anything about this and you see that people are prepared to go to prison, to lose their careers, they're prepared to never be allowed back into their country again to see their wife, surely they must really believe that what they are saying is the truth. They're not saying it just because they don't like Jews. They have to be saying it for the truth, don't they?
without a doubt, without a doubt. And it's so somebody actually said, they asked me on YouTube this week, they said, are you a denier? Because I'd said some, and they took it that way. I can't remember what I said actually, but anyway. And I said, how could I possibly deny something I'm not allowed to investigate? I've got two choices. Do I believe two Soviets who were at Nuremberg were found to be lying about the Katyn massacre a few decades later? These are the same two Soviets who claim that the Holocaust took place. Or do I guess at the numbers? Because that's what he wanted. He said, how many do you think died? I said, I just can't. There's just no way I can do it because, you know, it's impossible. Impossible question.
Well, how can it be stirring up hate either? How can it be hateful to say, do you know what? Your relatives didn't actually die. There's evidence to show that they're still alive. Anybody else would be really pleased to hear the news that their relatives didn't die a horrible, awful, ghastly death and that there was evidence to show that they were still alive. Anyone normal would be pleased at that. But if you're a Jew, then that's inciting racial hatred to produce evidence to show that Jews weren't tortured to death in hideous ways. It's the whole, when, as soon as you look into everything around this Holocaust myth, you have to see that it is all built on lies. It cannot possibly be any other way. When you have a law that's in place to force people to go along with a certain dogma, with a certain telling of history, then it has to be because you're being lied to about that. And as soon as you look into it a little bit further, you find out what the explicitly implied, and it's basically the findings of the Nuremberg trials. And as soon as you look at the Nuremberg trials, you see Katyn, what you just mentioned there, Dennis, and yet the Russians admitted that the Katyn massacre was carried out by the Soviets. And yet it was the Katyn massacre that the Germans were charged with. That's part of the Holocaust story. Part of denying the Holocaust is to say that the Germans were not responsible for the Katyn massacre.
That's been proven in the 70s, I think it was the 70s, weren't it, when finally the official verdict was the Soviets did that particular massacre. And plus, Churchill and Roosevelt always knew about it. But then again, from what I've discovered in the research recently, that wasn't surprising either, because at the end of the day, they were all in it together.
And when you look at these brave revisionists, these people that are speaking up about this, saying that they're all in their 70s, you know, you've got elderly people, Professor Foray's son, David Irving, and you've got Ernst Sundel, who's now passed away. These elderly people that all their life, you know, that when they should have been retiring and having it easy, they're spending their time in solitary confinement just because they're trying to get the truth out to the new generations, to us. I mean, if it wasn't for these people, I wouldn't know this. I wouldn't know this injustice that's going on in the world. We have to be so thankful for the internet and for these people that put it on the internet. I mean, Ernst Sundel was using the internet decades ago with his wife, with Ingrid Sundel. And she's a lovely lady. I mean, it almost brought me to tears seeing the interview with her when she was talking about her memories of what went on and when they stopped the trains and her mother was freed. I think you used part of her interview in the documentary, Dennis. Yeah, it's so moving, that part.
Can I just say as well, at this moment in time, before there's any videos taken down, I've come across a series called Europa, The Last Battle. I think there's six parts, one or two keep being taken down. It's a tremendous documentary, and I'll tell you why, not only because it includes what I put in The Greatest Story and in Communism by the Back Door, but it also goes into depth themselves. I think it's a Swedish-based, they're called Europa TV, and it's an absolutely wonderful documentary, and I implore that if you go on it to download it, because the information on there is tremendous, even about the Polish invasion and other touchy subjects about World War II. They go into depth, and obviously they use a lot of stuff what I had in the Greatest Story. That's Europa, The Last Battle.
Yeah, I put that in the sidebar at the radioarian.com site just to try and draw some attention to that. I just think they did really well with it because they seem to be going into areas that you covered yourself, but you weren't able to really expand on them. You
know, that's right. They went into a bit more depth.
Yeah, where they're hour-long episodes, they're really going into it. And probably, you know, not speaking English, they probably got access to stuff that's in German that you may not have had access to yourself. I mean, that's why David Irving is so good. Well, they got some good footage there, because, you know, he can speak German, so he can go in these archives and see what's there. It's like when we have Messerschmitt on. Because he can speak German, he can access a lot of information that we wouldn't be able to.
We'd pass over,
Just read in English. I mean, I recommend everyone to watch that. And they have. YouTube have already pulled the first episode.
I think he's back up again, though. I think he must have replaced whatever they pulled him on. But, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm fairly sure I saw it again.
Well, this is one of the reasons why, you know, with Radio Area, when we first set this up, we wanted our own platform, because we knew that if we went on YouTube, chances are it would get taken down. If we went on SoundCloud, chances are it would be taken down. So we've got our own server, we've got our own site, so we can't be taken down, and we're not beholden to these subscribers. I mean, a lot of people like Red Ice are particularly worried, because that's one of their major outlets is YouTube. Yep. With all the subscribers, and, you know, we've got to try and be independent and produce our own stuff and our own platforms. So I am really pleased that when we set Radio Aryan up, we didn't set it up around YouTube. You know, being available on YouTube is just that's a bonus, but that's not the point of it. You know, you're downloading the MP3s files is the point of it. And this is the thing with nationalism and with revisionism. We have to keep on top of technology and these technological advances and use them for getting the truth out there. And that's what Ernst Sandor really sort of pioneered. And he started off with his publishing company, and he brought out that Did 6 Million Really Die, which is a fantastic leaflet. They weren't able to contradict any of it. None of it was contradicted. They just had to try and silence it. And then he moved on from there to putting the stuff online and making the documentaries. I mean, there's so many wonderful documentaries, especially covering the Great Holocaust Trial. The actual film of that is really interesting. And I'd recommend people check out Michael Hoffman's book of that as well, because a lot of the stuff that went on in the courtroom, you don't actually see in the news reports. Some of the news reports, they only put on once, and then they pulled them when they showed that these witnesses had been found to be dishonest and that their stories were not credible. They cut that, and it talks all about that in the book. Because, you know, with these court cases, I mean, over here in Britain, you're not even allowed to have a photograph in the courtroom, let alone recording it. So it's important that we got people in there that were writing up what happened. And it was after this that they changed the laws, you see, to try and prevent it ever happening again. Sorry, go on, Dennis.
No, I was just going to say that first trial, I'm pretty sure, was responsible for not only the star witnesses that they brought in to try and debunk him. They ended up having to go back and change the books. What they'd all made money on writing about their experience in the Holocaust, they have to go back and change them for fear of court action. But not only that, they altered, then they have to go to Auschwitz and alter the actual total. Took about 2.5 million off due to that trial.
So he was public enemy number one after that.
Without
just imagine having to change the books and change the plaque and admit that they were wrong. But they still won't admit that they are wrong. It's still,
well, they still say 6 million.
Yeah, you still got to say 6 million, even if you're stood in front of the plaque there in Germany or in Poland, isn't it? Yeah. Auschwitz. But even if you're there and you say it's 6 million didn't die, only 1 million, as the plaque says, or 4 million. As it keeps changing, you're still actually breaking the law. It's so incongruous. If only the left and the liberals knew about this, actually looked into this. But of course, this is why they want to keep it silent so much. As soon as there's a whiff of Holocaust denial, then hope not hate, and the Antifa will be there trying to shut the place down. Recently, there was a conspiracy club that were having a talk about Princess Diana and about her being offed by the Mossad, which is another touchy subject. But because Jez Turner might have been in the audience, Jez, notorious Holocaust denier Turner, Hope Not Hate managed to get this thing shut down. And he wasn't even part of the organization. For sure. And that they've done this before with Nick Colostrom. Nick Colostrom has been talking somewhere about 7-7 and 9-1-1, and they've shut it down just because they knew that he was going to be there. Because it's so dangerous. They know that if anybody gets to actually hear about this stuff, they're gonna think, well, hang on a minute. Yeah, I have been lied to. That is a hoax. Because it is such an obvious hoax when you think about it, and there is so much evidence to prove it. I think that first trial was when they had Fred Leuchter, Dennis, the Leuchter report. Or it might have been the second trial.
I think that was the second trial when they didn't turn up, I don't think, did they, some of them? I might be wrong. But I'm pretty sure he went away after that first trial because he ordered a retrial, the judge, didn't he? I think during that time, after that first trial, he then got in touch with Fred and paid Fred quite a fair bit of money to go over there because he was on his honeymoon. Risked going into a communist country and doing such an experiment, he's risking his life and his wife, no doubt, but managed to do it, got out, come back. And then the judge refused admission of evidence. How bad can it get?
They were so cocksure that they were going to win this trial.
Oh, yeah.
So cocksure about it. They had all the publicity for it, all the news cameras there, all these witnesses were going to be there, and the whole world was going to see Ernst Undall destroyed by the gas chamber witnesses. And it turned out the other way around. And it was after that that they made certain that never again would any of these Holocaust witnesses be put in the dock because their witness testimony was so obviously a pack of lies. And when the David Irving trial happened, he wasn't allowed to put any of these witnesses in the dock. They certainly never offered to. And yet with the Ernst Zundel one, they had these so-called witnesses that were desperate to go there to the trial and testify to what they had seen. They had no idea that they were going to be ripped apart in the way that they were. I mean, coming out with things like different coloured smoke coming out of the chimneys to show what different race was being put through the gas chamber. I mean, that sort of thing. It's just ludicrous when you think about it. You could tell who it was that was being burnt by the colour of the smoke.
Yeah, well, I think all this comes from the fact that after World War II and the Nuremberg trial, there was no comeback from the German side. So literally, you could sit down and write a book and whatever, you know, you could make up about, you know, this evil regime was given carte blanche. Whereas if anybody sat down and tried to do a proper review of, you know, the Holocaust or anything like that, didn't get published, so... You know, it's obviously the Jewish control of the media, communist purge in Europe, combined leads us to where we are today, where, you know, it's a stalemate.
They weren't allowed to defend themselves in the Nuremberg trials. They weren't allowed to have the documents that they requested. They weren't allowed to have the usual rules that apply to court cases. In fact, it was explicitly stated at the beginning of the court case, wasn't it, that the normal rules that apply to finding whether evidence is factual or truthful or not do not apply in this case. So the Allies were allowed to say whatever they liked, and the Germans just had to keep quiet and admit to it.
And Goering dominated that courtroom. That was the immense personality of that guy, because even with them restraints... you know, he certainly dominated it. They were worried about him, although the result were never in doubt.
And it's still the same to this day, isn't it? Yeah, they just go along with it. Germany, I mean, Ernst Sandel made a film, Germany, Get Up Off Your Knees, because Germany's still bowing down and scraping the ground and accepting all these lies, accepting all these Holocaust effigies that they have, these idols, the Holocaust idols that they put up all around Germany, that reminding them of this terrible deed that they did, which is just a pack of lies, that they looked after these Jews. These Jews
were in those camps. Since school days, haven't they? Yeah, that's the problem.
Those Jews were better off than the Germans were. They had food in the camps. They had medicine in the camps. The Germans that weren't actually in the work camps, they didn't have food. They didn't have medicine. They didn't have shelter. They had no doctors, no hospitals, no nothing. And the Jews that were in the camps did, right up until the last part of the war when the Allies bombed all the railway lines and all the ways that they had for getting food in there. It's got to be the most hideous injustice that the Germans have been accused of this since Christ was crucified. This is why they say that it's a reversal of the Christian faith and the crucifixion of Christ. You got one man that was crucified, that lots of people saw, that witnesses testified to throughout the ages, a religion formed around it. And now the opposite of that, the people that actually killed Christ, you've got a pack of lies saying that 6 million of them were killed. And it's basically tried to turn them around from instead of being the Christ killers and the most evil race that we have, to being these poor people that are that have been persecuted for nothing. And the evil race are now the Germans, the most Christian race out of all the European nations were the Germans.
I think it's even worse than that, though. I think they've actually changed, the actual, you don't see the old vision of a German male anymore, I don't believe. Some of it's not, whether it's been the multiple immigrations over the years since 45, but so much changed in Germany. The men are more effeminate, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem to me that solid German, backbone is there anymore. I think they've done something to the German race myself.
Well, it's the elderly ones that you see speaking up, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Sandel, and I forget the name of that elderly lady that's done a fantastic job of trying to expose the Holocaust. She's in her 80s, and they've threatened her with locking her up. But it's all these elderly people that are speaking up about this. We need younger people to be doing this and exposing this. And I've heard some people say, oh, well, it's old, it's 70 years old, we don't need to talk about that. That doesn't need to be a part of modern nationalism or the alt-right. But it does, because this Holocaust whip is always what is going to get used against nationalists. They're always going to say nationalism leads to 6 million Jews in the gas chambers. Can't have nationalism. That's where it leads to. So you have to break this spell. Because that's what it is. It's a spell that everybody's under.
It is a spell. Yeah.
It protects the Jews.
I was just going to say in America as well, because they've got this freedom of speech to an extent in America where they can't just throw this law down. I do think at some point they will try to get that Holocaust law in there. Other means. But because that, what's coming out of America, there's a lot of people obviously in America don't believe in the Holocaust now. And that is not good for them because it sets off other people thinking. But if they can close down America and put a ban on them, then that would be one giant step for them.
Well, one of the things that the countries have to do when they join the European Union is to have a gas chamber law and a Holocaust temple built. That is one of these laws. I mean, we've had that with Bulgaria, Romania, all the recent countries that joined the EU. Yeah. That's a part of it. You've got to have a Holocaust law and a Holocaust temple. And if you look at Britain, we're building a new one. They've got competitions to design them and all of this. And David Cameron has looked at where it's going to be. I think it's going to be right outside the Houses of Parliament. And they've set aside a certain huge amount of money to educate the young, brainwash young people with this. And they are going to keep pushing this story, this myth on our young children. They're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep putting the money into it. So we have to keep pushing back against it. We have to keep exposing it as a lie, because they're not going to forget about it. They're not going to say, oh, it's 70 years old, so it's not that important. Like some nationalists are saying.
It's vital to them, because absolutely, it gives them that leeway of doing whatever they want, because they can't really do anything because it's not fair, because 6 million Jews died. So they're going to Palestine, do what they do. They're going to, they bomb Syria, for the sake of it, and nobody says anything.
And anything to do with National Socialism, putting your nation first, looking out for what's best for the race, racial hygiene, and not allowing perversity, encouraging the breeding of the race, keeping the race pure, all those things that are to do with National Socialism, good things that if you suggest them to people, they say, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with creating an existence for white children? What's wrong with that? But as soon as people say, the Nazis did that, then that's it. People don't want to know because of the gas chambers. It's essential. So much of National Socialism, if you talk about it to people, they say, well, that's a really good idea. Having a government that's just for the people that actually make up the government. I mean, the state should be representative of the people that it's governing. It should be ethnically representative of them, and it should be looking out purely for that people. I mean, what a revolutionary idea. The people looking after you are part of your own family.
Well, the government looking after you, that's revolutionary, isn't it? Because I can't think of any other department, National Socialist.
Well, this is it. I mean, people say, oh, no, National Socialism, that's old. It's 70 years old. But the ideas that they had are timeless. And we've talked about it a lot, haven't we, Dennis, about these ideas. They're the same ideas that they had in the Middle Ages. And Adolf Hitler as a Führer was pretty much a monarchy, a modern-day monarchy. That's because that way of living is the correct way.
Mm-hmm. Well, what annoys me is they have certain means of breaking things up and throwing people off. Like they'll never fail for the focus point to be on the Nazis, because they'll always say Nazis. But when it comes to the other side, the communists and things like that, they'll either say Bolsheviks, Reds, communists maybe, but it's never a focal point. So consequently, it's all fragmented, where with Germany, it's rock solid Nazis. And that's, I suppose in a way, psychology in a way, which annoys me, because it's either, World War II was won by communism, and but they'll never say communism. It'll either be allies or the Soviets or, whatever, but they'll never nail it down like they do with the Nazis.
Well, nobody seems to really know the crimes of communism, do they?
Well, that's one of the reasons, I think, because, I mean, in that film, I watched the film, didn't I, about the Cristeros, and they mentioned Bolshevism. Now, they never mentioned Freemasonry, they never mentioned communism. Bolshevism, to me, it was never taught in school to me, so I'm not quite sure how many people in the world, in Britain or wherever, know what a Bolshevik really is. But, that's one reason why they keep fragmenting everything.
I think it must have been important at some time, because the word Bolshe entered the English language.
Well, it was like brazen, weren't it?
The word Bolshe must come from Bolshevik.
Really, doesn't really sum them up to me, that. I don't
think
it's blood, just being brazen.
Well, so, I mean, there was a time when people knew about this, but it became eclipsed by what the horrible big bad Nazis did.
When you've got people are shocked if they ever get so far into investigating World War II, once they see what Bolshevism really was, obviously, Stalin takes number one position in Lenin. But up to that point, I don't think they're that wise on it.
Well, what was the film like then? This is the film that you took parts from it for the recent episode of the documentary.
I never actually saw the film before I did the part. I saw a documentary and the trailer of the film. I managed to get hold of the film the other night and watched it, and it was a film. What amazes me is this. So many people haven't heard about this 3-year stretch in Mexico, not even Mexicans. So it just shows the power of what the Jewish media have. But it never mentioned Freemasonry, it never mentioned communism. But it mentioned, I think it was Calles that the president was getting annoyed at some people calling his government Bolsheviks. That was the essence of that. But other than that, never mentioned. But it did show the persecutions, what the Catholic Church suffered at the time, and just what I thought one of the best parts of the film was when the general who was asked to command the whole thing, because there was 20,000-30,000 of them, but they were all fragmented. One leader had run 1,000, another have 2,000, and they wanted one central leader. And he had to kind of meet with all these leaders in a room and dominate the room. and put onto these leaders, get the respect. And he showed different ways of doing it. Some people, you know, he'd ease off. Some people he'd weigh on. And that was really interesting how he got the focus of everybody to say, we'll serve under you. That to me was impressive.
Like Machiavellian politics, ways to appeal to people and get them to work for you. And there was other, because we got asked about that in the comments, was to ask about more about that and the film and where you got it from. And another question that was in the comments was about Texas. People wanted to hear more about the Freemasonic creation of Texas. And I know you've been looking into that just before we went on air, Dennis. So maybe you'd want to talk about that for a little bit.
Double-sided blade to this, really, because when I was a kid, I went to the pictures and big screen, big 20, 30-foot screen, like I was only a little kid, and I watched the Alamo, and you know, I've always been like, fascinated with that story of how 100 Texans could withstand, you know, for 13 days this assault by these thousands of Mexicans. And I actually went down to the Alamo at one point and, you know, to see the place. I was a bit disappointed with the dinosaur across the road, like, I suppose that's America for you. A dinosaur outside some kind of sports shop or something. But anyway, I didn't know at the time that the likes of Crockett and Jim Boy and the rest of the leaders down there were Freemasons. Texas is a Masonic state. The actual Lone Star badge is a pentagram. It was meant to be a pentagram, apparently. And so, consequently, the thoughts on the Alamo have kind of dwindled as I've been looking into it, but that did not cause, because Santa Ana, who also, you know, was leader of the Mexican army, like president, he was a Freemason as well. So it was a battle of Freemasons, really. So to me, I just thought, well, just let me get on with it now. I've lost interest in the whole thing. Going back to that Lone Star State, it is a pentagram, like I mentioned in the documentary. And interestingly enough, this pentagram is all over the place. I mean, you've got in America, the capitalists, they actually have a white one in the American, you know, the campaign for the Republican campaign for the elections, like they've got this elephant with this white pentagram in it. You've got communists who have a red pentagram in theirs. And then Islam is another one. That's a green one, you know, on a white background. And they were fighting American troops in Iraq who had a pentagram on their trucks and things. You know? So, again, it's done half get about. I think it was a white pentagram that the army have, the American army. So, fascinating in one way. I mean, it's also the Eastern Star, which is a branch of Freemasonry, although I've had arguments with Freemasons many times. They say there is no women's fraternity, but the Eastern Star is supposed to be a women's Freemason fraternity. And they use a pentagram. And then, obviously, you can go into the Church of Satan, the black magic. It's used in black magic and witchcraft. So it has had quite a bearing on our society.
Well, just thinking about what you said there about the fact that it's on these different flags. It's on the American flag and it's on the Islamic flag. And then you've got the two sides fighting against each other.
Yeah.
It seems to me as if it's a symbol of somebody that's wanting to sow discord and get two sides fighting. Doesn't really care what the side is fighting for, so long as the two sides are fighting together. And you look at communism, you look at all the communist states use that star and look at the way that they treated their own people, horrific way that they treated their own people. And if you look at the black magic side of it, you've got a pentagram with two points upwards, which you can fit the goat's head in it, the goat head of Mendes. And then you turn it upside down, you've got the goddess figure. So again, you've got two sides to it. You can have it upright or you can have it facing down, but it's still the same pentagram. So you've got one side that believes that it's good and one side that believes that it's evil. But in actual fact, it's evil because it's just causing chaos and death and destruction. And I guess they use that maybe as a symbol of power, but it's not a symbol of order. It seems to be used as a symbol of chaos and destruction to me. You know, that star is something to look out for.
Stonehenge is based on a pentagram as well.
Stonehenge is based on pi, isn't it? On the number of pi. Obviously, it's in a circle, but the actual measurements of it all fit in with to do with various. I'm no mathematician, but to do with various numbers associated with pi, and also with the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid and Stonehenge
are built of
certain same measurements, and it's also to do with the circumference of the Earth. I mean, the ancients knew a lot more than we give them credit for, especially these great structures.
But the pentagram at America was built based on Stonehenge. It's 25 or 26 times bigger, but built to the exact measurements of that ancient way of measuring, not the feet and inches. You know, they have a certain way of measuring, haven't they?
Well, the pentagram, I mean, that is an old symbol of Freemasonry as well, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think it goes back into the Kabbalah, doesn't it? Far as I know.
Well, I think, and also, I mean, we do have to be careful with some of these things because, I mean, geometry, we do see that everywhere. The cube, the rectangle, the hexagram, everything that we build and everything in life is made up from that. But what the occultists are trying to do is to control that. Rather than them being controlled by God, they're trying to control the gods behind nature by using these symbols and these amulets. And the Kabbalah is all about making amulets up and making these occult symbols up and trying to control these supernatural forces, which as a Christian, you're not supposed to do.
And, no, and they tried it to has been sneak done, I believe.
It in. Well, the Kabbalah, they tried to sneak it in. I mean, I'm reading it at the moment, Michael Hoffman's book on how the Roman Catholic Church became infiltrated with paganism and the Kabbalah. And he believes it happened in about 15th, 16th century during the Renaissance. And when Vatican II came about, everyone was shocked at what had happened. But that had been building up for 500 years secretly. You had these agents within the church that were getting involved in paganism and Hermeticism and the Kabbalah and the Talmud. And Vatican II was the culmination of it all when it was sort of revealed to the public. But all of this goes back to the Jews, really. It goes back to the Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah goes back to Babylon. And the Jews, when they were in Babylon and Egyptian and the Egyptian ways of doing things, and it was all about magic, basically. Instead of it being about the one God and about the Creator, it was about trying to harness the power of angels and nature deities and demons. And even some of these people in the Roman Catholic Church got hooked up in it. And that was, as I say, that was about 500 years ago. But up till that point, up until the 15th century, the Church was against all of this. It was against usury. It was against the mistreatment of people. And it was for the nation state. It was an important part of building our nation states in Europe. And look at what's happened to it now. Once you allow the Jews in there, once you allow corruption in there, pagan ideas, occult ideas, it will just corrupt everything. That's why we have a corrupted church now. And that's what Hitler was against, wasn't it? I mean, he stood against all of this.
Well, that's why I believe that under Hitler, the church was back to its original state. I've always stated this, that he was the protector. And once Hitler was in and destroyed the Freemason lodges, the Freemasonry scattered out to the Vatican as well. I don't think they were slow on the uptake. And certainly, you know, in that period, I think in modern times, that was the time when the church was back to its original teachings. They may have had one or two differences with National Socialism, but it wasn't nothing as severe as what the problems have got today.
Well, this is another one of the comments that were left at your YouTube channel. Someone was asking about positive Christianity and how could Hitler be a Catholic if Germany was getting involved in all this positive Christianity. But positive Christianity was just taking anything that was harmful to the Germans out of Christianity. And there's nothing harmful to white people in the Bible. So they weren't messing around with the Bible. But what they were doing was sticking to what it says in the Bible about the Jews.
Yeah, they weren't cheap. I mean, what they're trying to do, they're trying, with the propaganda, they're trying to make out they were going to create a new religion, which is garbage. What he was going to do, he was going to, like I said, clear out all the Freemasons, the communists and everything. And then in the Bible, if there's anything that was destructive, to what they would have thought would have been destructive to actual Christianity, they would have got rid of. But the church would still be in Rome. But it would have been exactly, as I said, it would have been communist and Freemasonry free. Not like it is with the, under the Rothschild. And the banks, of course. The banks would have been free from the Rothschilds.
Well, positive Christianity wasn't a new religion. I mean, you could have been Roman Catholic or you could have been Protestant. I mean, the ideals behind it would have remained the same. I mean, the ideals are the same today with Christian identity. It's trying to keep Christianity the way that it was intended, which is anti-Jewish. I mean, don't forget the Jews. Yeah. Jews killed Christ. And
well, there's a clash with American Christianity. When I say Christianity, I'm talking European. That American Christianity is pro-Israel, which is totally different. Against the Christianity that I believe in.
Yeah, it's very different, isn't it? I mean, in America, you've got evangelical Christianity, and that was really sort of co-opted at the beginning of last century with the Scofield Bible, which instead of putting Israel and Judah, it just wrote the Jews. And in the side notes, it started talking about the Jews returning to Palestine and having their own country and saying that all these prophecies would be fulfilled by the Jews going back there and having this country Israel. That goes totally against all the Christian teachings, which teach us that the church is Israel. The church is Israel. Yeah. For these Jews to hijack that word and call this bit of dirt out in the Middle East, that is, highly offensive. And the only way they're able to do that is through infiltrating these churches and changing the actual teaching of Christianity, which as you say, I think they really did succeed in that with the evangelical movement in America. But now they've taken over the Church of England. They've got Francis in with the Roman Catholics. I dare say that they've also got corruption in the Eastern Orthodox Church. It's everywhere, but it doesn't mean we throw the church out. The Christian teachings stand the test of time.
This is what people can't understand, though. They tend to look at the Catholic Church today has always been like that, but like you say, that's not the Catholic Church. But I say that as well today. That is not the Catholic Church. That is the Church of Lucifer. It's a Freemason church.
That's what it's become. That's what it's become. Just to go back to what you were saying about Hitler getting rid of the occult and getting rid of the Freemasons and the Freemasonic temples. We can see that he was really serious about this because of the way he rejected the Ku Klux Klan. And then you've got a group that's ostensibly pro-white but has occult links. And they were against it. I mean, that's got to be proof of how against this he was, let alone what he wrote about pagans and occult mystics in Mein Kampf. He was against all that. It's modern-day Hollywood that tries to portray National Socialism as being interested in
Spielberg.
And our history, our traditions and our history, we weren't always Christian. And if you're interested in our traditions and history, then you're going to be interested in our pre-Christian history. I'm interested in pre-Christian history, but that doesn't make me a pagan. It doesn't make me into the occult. It just means that I'm interested in my people's history. And that's all the National Socialists were. And if you read Hitler's own writings, then you can understand that. And, of course, there were the odd people that were vehemently against Christianity.
You're always going to get the odd one or two.
Yeah, but that wasn't representative of National Socialism as a whole. And we can see that with the Movement for Positive Christianity. There's a good book that this priest actually wrote about that. It's translated into English. And Bill Fink from Christa Guinea did a 7-part series on this book, pointing out bits of it where they could have done better. But generally, the idea behind it was just to get back to what Christianity should be and prevent it from becoming any more corrupted and any more liberal as it has become today. I mean, we know it's become so twisted today that we've been told to welcome the invasion of our countries instead of repelling it and protecting the borders.
Exactly. Well, I had a British... Well, he had a Union Jack as an avatar, and he called himself obviously British, and he went to town on me about some about the Jews and how can you blame the Jews of everything and that. And this guy was supposed to be, in his mind, he was a nationalist, but he was sticking up for the Jews. And I tried to tell him, look, you know, you can't be a nationalist, stick up for the Jews. That's why Muslims, London's full of Muslims. But whether or not he got the message, I don't know.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it, Dennis? I mean, we've got a lot of groups, Britain First, English Defence League, Rebel Media, and they all see the Islamic problem, and we do have a serious problem with Islam, but what they don't see is the Jews that facilitated that. And these Jewish refugee charities that are bringing them into Europe and the Jews that are behind these laws that prevent us from criticising that. They don't see that. I mean, it's great that they have a patriotic feeling and they can see the harm that's being done, but if only they could look behind that as to who it was that facilitated it. That's the only issue I have with them.
That clip in the final part of Communism by the Back Door when Cameron is talking, I mean, seriously, I mean, really, maybe I should have emphasized it even more, but he had him talking, somebody recorded him secretly talking to a group of Muslims, and he actually said, the wordings that he said, he wants to see more Muslims come into the country, but not only more Muslims come into the country, he wanted them in the highest positions as politicians and in the army. I mean, how can a country which is not specifically Muslim to begin with want Muslims in high positions in the army? That, to me, is just says it all. This is going to be a country at some stage.
Well, is this ludicrous fantasy that their loyalty will be to Britain and not to Islam? And yet you only have to look at Khan when he became mayor of London and look at the celebrations that went on in Pakistan because they'd got a Pakistani that was now the mayor of London.
Well, I mean, you think that's about loyalty. It. I mean, if you thought that even 50 years ago, you'd have thought, you know, you were slate missing. It should never have been able to happen, but it's only happened because they've allowed so many in and they've been able to vote him in. And they'll do that with Europe. They'll do the same with Europe. They get enough Muslims in Europe, and then before long they'll have representatives, and then after that comes Sharia law.
And the Jews do always do very well out of that. We only have to look back in history to see how well the Jews did in the countries that were taken over by the Muslims. It's only a small disagreement over Palestine that has caused any argument between them. Up until that point, there's never been any problems between them, and it's always been Jews and Muslims united against Christians. It's the Christians that are the enemy, and Christianity was always implicitly white for 1950 years. It's only in the last century that when you think of Christian, you think of non-white faces very, very recently, and that's only due to corruption. We've got another question that was actually put in there, Dennis. We've got 5-6 minutes to go. Well, someone put a comment in asking what your thoughts were on Putin.
Oh, this is one of them questions. This one. Difficult.
I know you've answered it before, but
I have answered it before, but since then I've been sent certain videos. To be honest, I saw him give a speech in Israel. Somebody sent me the video, and he did a speech on the Holocaust, where he abused the Nazis and was saying he was standing by the Jews and the Holocaust. We should never let people forget about the Holocaust. That's on one side of it. On the other side of it, the argument what I was given was that, for instance, you take the Cossacks who fought with the Germans are in a higher position now in Russia than they ever have been since the Bolshevik Revolution, and they adore him. You've got him. People say he's a Jew or his mother was a Jew, but as far as I know, he's an Orthodox Christian. He practices Orthodox Christianity. He says
he was baptized as a child.
His mother.
Wasn't he baptized as a child? His mother smuggled him in to baptize him as a child.
Yeah, that's right. He told that story.
His personality.
Yeah, so you know, if that is the case, then he's, you know, the New World Order. There has to be a war because they don't want Christianity in the New World Order. And Russia, obviously, you know, in the schools now and the churches and everything now is geared to, you know, the church and state working together with the Orthodox Christian Church. So you know. It's so confusing. I mean, I know that, you know, I don't think he's stupid. I'm not convinced he's a stupid guy, But, you know, you can't be saying, you can't be doing one thing and saying the other without knowing that one is wrong. So confusing signals coming out, but at least he is a sensible guy, whereas you got the Obamas of the world and people who just want to go willy-nilly causing wars all over, where he's preventing them. He has stopped the New World Order in Syria. They have tried to start a war against Russia in the Ukraine. He did well to get back the Crimea quickly, because as far as I'm led to believe, Israel wanted the Ukraine to keep the Crimea, and that would mean then that Putin would have to move his fleet out of the Black Sea to the other side of the country, which left that all open for Israel to grow stronger. So conflicting reports coming out, and if I could say for sure, I'd say it. But at this stage of the game, you know, if he's not the man I hope he is, then we're in real trouble, because we haven't got a Christian nation powerful enough to stop these Luciferian idiots.
Well, I think you have to look at the actions, not the words.
I do, and that keeps me going. Words.
Russia recently banned pornography. They banned all the pornography stations on the internet. This is the second time they've done it.
Statue of Christ in the world.
You know, they banned pornography. They've banned the teaching of homosexuality to children. Yeah. They made the most recent Walt Disney movie, which was promoting homosexuality. They made that an X certificate.
Yeah,
he stands up.
So like I said, you got to praise him on one hand. It is weird.
I would say that when he's talking about these Holocaust laws, I think a large part of that is basically the Russian myth of the Great Patriotic War.
Don't forget,
a lot of them
see it as... lose more by saying there is no Holocaust than gay, I'll give you that. It was just that speech you gave, it did throw me.
You've got to look at it that they see it that Russia was invaded by Germany, and a lot of them died, a lot of them starved. So well, they look at it like that. And also, you've got to look at it as if America wanted to undermine Russia, that would be one of the ways to do it, would be to undermine their belief in the Great Patriotic War. So, that's another thing, because over here, we get the left that's funded by the deep state. And I dare say that over in Russia, the nationalist groups and the revisionists would be funded by the deep state. Because
that is
the way they would try to undermine him. So, I'm like you, Dennis. I think, there are things about him that I don't like, but on the whole, he does seem to be much better than any of our Western politicians. And the longer he stays in power, the better. Right, he keeps the balance of power. He prevents there being a new world order controlling everything, because he believes in sovereignty, doesn't he? But he believes in national sovereignty, which is which is what we stand for.
And he's criticised the West for losing the belief in Christianity and for being ashamed of even mentioning certain things about it's more. Now you can't say certain things because it's politically correct not to, because you're going to offend a Muslim and, things like that. Christmas, they're going to ban Christmas at some point, they are. So, like you said, there's a lot of good about him, but obviously it's not clear cut.
He said that liberalism is Satanism, basically. The West has lost its reason to live, and the East still has it because the East still has its religion, it still has its faith, and it still bases its laws on the Christian laws and the Christian faith, which is why Russia has succeeded and we're not.
I did a section coming in by the back door where it was explained that all the civilizations what got rid of Christianity eventually fell. They just went into oblivion.
Yeah,
from the Mayans to the Babylonians to whoever. They've always, the religion, the Christianity has kept countries, alive.
Well, and also keeping the borders and keeping the aliens out and keeping the Jews out. That keeps the country
generally
alive as well. Dennis, we were about to go over time. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. So until then, we hope you all have a wonderful weekend ahead of you. Bye.
You're tuned into Radio Aryan.